I want to welcome you to the last writing week. The last writing. How about fill these chairs up? We're going to fill the circle. This is not the front. This is just a part of the circle. Help yourself, please. On the bulletin board today for the writing hour, it says it is important. Or maybe you read it. Can you tell me? What's on the board today? Yeah, that's close. Is it is important to act as if bearing witness matters. And that's Maxine Kuhman, and she is not a religious, she's not Norwegian. She's a major poet, American poet, Maxine Kuhman. It is important to act as if bearing witness matters. Let's get some paper for anybody that didn't bring some, because we will be using it. Those of you who have thick notebooks with lots of extra paper, would you like some?
Yeah.
Are you usually carrying? Here it is. These are extra sheets.
Okay.
So between you, help yourself, and there's some pens too if you need it.
Do you have extra
pens? I'm going to pay attention to that quote today. And that first of all, I want to say I'm Eunice Scarfe. I come down from Edmonton, Alberta. I grew up in Seattle, Washington, in a Lutheran home. And then off to Concordia, Moorhead. And then off to Chicago, and then off to England. I married a British boy, and I'm in graduate school. And I thought I'd never see Americans, Norwegians, or Lutherans again. And in late 1960s, it was very likely that we would never be able to afford to come back across the ocean. We had no telephone in our flat that first year. There was no email. I know I'm taking some of you back to the dark ages. And not once in 3 years did I have a phone call with anybody at home. I hope you're crying now. I hope you're in tears at how hard life was. I really thought I would never be back in the tradition of my childhood. And here I am. Holland was visited by me and my family in 1962, in that year in which there was discussion. Come join the circle, please, if you don't mind. So for me, it's coming home, and it's great to see you. Some of you, I know we've crossed paths previous in our lives, and some of you are here for the first time. Let's find out who is here for the first time. To hold on. First visit, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome. Excuse me, could you please, the circle there or there? And then we'll enlarge the circle if we need to. So my question today is from Netta. Where is she? Netta, do you mind, Netta, if I raise the question you asked on the porch?
No,
if she does, we won't raise it. Hello, can you join the circle? There's one there, there's one here, and I know it's hot, so if you need to pull back to have a bit of air around you. When I came up the steps today, Netta said, would you like to say it, Netta, because I can do it better than I can.
Well, I think I asked you if people really wanted to hear Lutheran stories.
That's our question for 5 minutes. She expected me to answer this after I puffed up the hill without water. Do people really want to hear Lutheran stories? No, not all of you are Lutheran. How many of you are... No, I won't even ask. That's private. Not all of you are Lutheran, but this is a Lutheran tradition. Netta says to me, but would people really want to hear Lutheran stories? And I collapsed down in the chair, and she thought I needed water, but really I was so astonished by the question. Because it's one I've been asking for 20 years, and I like hearing it come from somebody else instead of from me. So what's your answer to that?
Well, I don't believe Garrison Keillor would be as popular as he is if people did not want to hear Lutheran stories.
Yeah, there's one answer. He wouldn't be as popular if they did not want to hear. Are they listening to Keillor because it's Lutheran?
Mm-mm.
What are they listening to?
Good story.
It's good stories. It's good story. What's the difference between subject matter and a good story? We could talk for a long time. Let's just raise the question. Subject matter doesn't drive the stories that are read.
Okay.
The stories that are read are usually because they're really good stories and really well written.
That's
just a degree to believe that.
I would argue that Lutherans have a special understanding of Garrison Keillor because of nuances that Lutherans understand that maybe others wouldn't.
Fair enough. Was Garrison Keillor a Lutheran?
No.
No, he was not.
He was not.
No.
He's immersed in Lutheran culture.
Okay. He lived in it,
mm-hmm.
Norwegian Lutheran, and he's used it. But I don't know if he did the Sunday school with the LCR and the LDR and the Lutheran League, and I don't know.
He was Brethren.
Let's have another answer to the question. This is Netta's question. It's almost as if I planted it, because I'm so glad you raised it.
My answer is it depends.
It depends, okay, that's our second answer. I think, I always notice all Holden teachers write all answers on the board. I can't write that fast. So if I miss yours, it depends. Go on.
I think that's a classic Lutheran question, and we deal with that all the time and trying to, like, at the college that I work at, trying to figure out how to tell people it's a good place to go, because we just kind of want people to just know what we're not really going to talk about it. So I think it's interesting because it's this modest, humble thing going on.
Okay, so it depends, and you're saying in the culture has it depends. That means culture. And I think probably I'll stop writing. It depends. Sorry, we had it depends. In the culture, it's the modest, what's the other word you said? Modest, humble.
Yeah.
Actually, Canadians normally feel that they have a corner on that, modest, humble.
Wow.
They'd be surprised to hear that there's a whole way of it down here. You know what the current definition of Canadian is? We're not Americans.
Uh-huh.
That's not very assertive, is it?
No.
But we're not. Any other reasons? And we're brainstorming. We're not spending the whole hour.
Could I just ask? I'm sorry, I came in a few minutes late. Was there a context for that question, or did it just kind of pop out of nowhere?
Was there a context for that question?
Yes.
Well, I guess I've written a bunch of stuff about being Lutheran and living at Holden Village, and it's sort of like, well, who would want to read it?
I see. Okay.
Well, you could ask that question about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a young woman who wants to hear what I have to say. I mean, all of us could ask that question.
Mm-hmm. So is it a question of the writer, that the writer asks, not that a particular culture asks? Every writer asks this, who wants to know? Is that what you're suggesting?
So,
yeah. I'm a young woman and I ask myself, who would want to know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's true we probably have a lot of commonality in the background, but it's probably also true that there's a lot of individual variation. Perhaps the lenses we see through might alter how we write it and how we look at things.
Say more so that I understand you, that there's more than one version we should have out there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, because we speak, you know, we have, you know.
Does any one of you want one person in this room to speak for all of you?
No.
Well, why not? I mean, you've all come to hold, and that narrows their differences, and you've all, you know, we're within 50 years of each other in age, so that would be half a century. So certainly one person could speak for this smaller group with this much in common, and we could have one version go out there.
Mm-hmm.
They've done this in history for a couple million years. There's a speaker for thousands of people, and the rest of the story is lost. It's either inserted or ignored. Do you want that to happen? Who's writing your story? Can one person summarize for the whole group?
And that's the
we started with a quote. It is important to ask as if bearing witness matters. And I was going to go straight to this book, but coming up the hill, Netta asked me this question. And she's talking about writers bear witness. They say, I see, I saw. They do not interview 26 and a half people and say, we see, we saw. They say, I. They either say I as in memoir, the narrator and the writer are the same person, or they create a character, or two characters, or a collection of characters, but they particularize. They are not doing the general average, they're doing the one. The stories you read are particular. Is anybody interested in a Lutheran story, or should you all find something that is outside your Lutheran experience? The first story I ever wrote was set in England, where I'd gone newly married, because up until that time, there'd been nothing interesting in my life. Minnesota, Norwegian, pastor's family. Oh no, when I got to England, that would be the source of my writer's life.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else experience this or know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's hear a few more and then we're going to write today. Like, I obviously assume writing matters or I wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously assume that bearing witness to your own story, telling your own version, matters. I assume that in one family, one person can't even be the one to record or remember, because there'd be as many versions as people in the family. The writer is invited to come and speak his or her version, and the requirement is not that it be true, but that the writing hang together like the architecture of a building, that it makes a good story. I think I believe that. Another...
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, just to take an example of the congregation from which I come. We go to church on Sunday. We sometimes go to meetings together. We're really busy. We rush in and out. We have a few people we talk to after church. We don't have enough time. And I've been going to church now for 30 years. And there are people that I have known. I mean, there's been lots of people in and out, but there are people I have known this long.
Yes.
And we came up to Holden together, and I'm finding out their stories.
And you might not have found them.
After all these years, I mean, I thought I knew them, but I didn't. I didn't know their real story. And some people have shared things with me.
Okay.
So
therefore,
that's a good answer.
So therefore, what?
So therefore, the idea of one person speaking for all obviously is ridiculous. And I know.
Has any one of you written about anything? Has any one of you, you know, it pushed yourself onto the page relative to the kinds of writing we're doing, which is personal writing, which is what I call literary writing, and then it follows conventions of poetry or prose, which could be essay or memoir or short story or novel or drama. Those are the conventions. Women are designing new texts, ways of writing. All writers are designing new ways of writing, but women writers have designed some interesting ways to bridge the gap between memoir and fiction. Has any one of you put together such a text? And you don't have to raise your hand. You're working on a text. Why do it? The question comes down to, or can also be asked, why write?
Maybe to share our humanity, to share our vulnerabilities, to put it out there so maybe the world can connect with it, or people can connect with it, and we become more human together at the same time.
Okay. So put it out there so you can connect with it. All right, anyone else?
Yeah.
Well, it isn't a very good paying job. I mean, you're likely, this is not going to improve your chances for professional development or income to be writing in a writing class all week.
I'm kind of still back on the question that Netta asked about Lutheran. Why does anybody want to know about the Lutheran? And my thought goes back to years and years of not only being Lutheran but being Scandinavian, and how we really have been very constipated with joy, I guess you could say, because we've never expressed ourselves like the Baptists do, or that are the Pentecostals that are so excited about their faith that they share it with everyone. The Scandinavian Lutherans, I think, have been more hesitant to do that.
And where is the place for expression of the personal in the daily life, in the moment, in the lifetime, as opposed to a description of in the 20th century? Protestant churches had these trends.
Right.
That would be histories.
Yeah. And then you talk about the humor. Garrison Keillor, he doesn't make fun of the church, but he makes fun of some of the idiosyncrasies of the church and of the people. Do you remember O.E. Jigs and Julep,
mm-hmm.
a book written by a little Episcopalian gal,
mm-hmm.
and how she was sitting in the Episcopal church and heard the Baptist singing "When the Roll is Called Up Yonder." It sounded so much more fun to be mm-hmm. a Baptist.
Okay, so thank you very much.
We need to share those things.
Okay, I agree. I'm going to ask the question a couple other ways. Maybe not what, I'm going to give you questions and then we're going to stop and write. Who's interested in the Lutheran story? The second question I want to ask, where are the Lutheran writers or out of our tradition? And if you're not Lutheran, please ask the question in your own tradition. Where are my writers? Where is the book that would describe my childhood in my church? If there isn't one, are you going to write it? Where is the book that accounts for your childhood and your relationship? Last night we heard segments of personal writing about different people's relationship to religious origin, faith, practice, belief. So what book have you ever picked up that said, that is the way it was? Religion was a character in my family. It wasn't just the church on the corner. It was presence, it was force, it was with dimension and history.
Kathleen Norris. And the Dakota.
And coming back to Dakota. She comes back to close up her mother's farm, grandmother's farm. She's a poet in New York. And she decides to stay, and the poets in New York throw up their hands. Like,
mm-hmm.
you were such a good poet. You know, go to South Dakota, what's going to happen to you? All right? That accounts for your experience. You can find it in those pages. All right. So we're changing the question a little bit. Who'd be interested in my story, or the Lutheran story, to where are the storytellers about the life you've lived or we have lived in North American Protestant 20th century childhoods in the church? Now, if that question doesn't compel you to find it, to look for an answer, I'm just going to leave it with you to go away to dinner. Where are storytellers? I would ask, the last question is to write on your page, who is interested in my story? Could you just put that down as a question? You don't have to answer it, but you might want to answer it during our writing time. So we go from the general, is anybody interested in Lutherans, is where are the storytellers of our childhoods and our adulthoods? Are there any novels or short stories set in our colleges? You know, New York comes up as a fictional place and a real place. Have you ever read a novel set in New York?
And Three Girls in Brooklyn.
Once in a while, New York shows up in fiction. Periodically, it shows up also in the news. It's a real place and a fictional place. I live in Edmonton, Alberta. I bet you've never seen it in fiction, and I rarely have. Seattle, maybe it shows up in fiction, more than Edmonton. We have a Toronto novel, we call it. Michael Ondaatje finally put Toronto on the map, so thank God Toronto's at least on the page. And then Rudy Weed put the high-level bridge in Edmonton in a novel, so we've got the bridge on a page. But to get the real world you live in into a page of fictional text is an enormous shift. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Yes. Mm-hmm. Gloria Sawai, that I've mentioned many times, who wrote some of her novel up here, she's Gloria Oskar Sawai, tried to disguise the Lutheran Church in her novel as Methodist and United because she couldn't believe the Lutheran Church could show up on a fictional page. Mm-hmm. And on the corner, and she'd never seen it in fiction. And for several stories, she had the United Church singing Lutheran hymns until somebody called her on it and said, we don't sing those hymns in United Church, and you can't borrow it. You'll have to take the church of your childhood, which was Lutheran, and it was a major shift. Because she, as a writer, had no models and no mentors for putting a fictional church on the page, and it was fictional. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you don't need to. It obviously is a question that's of urgency. If you live in New York, you can set the fiction in New York, and nobody says, oh, is this a real place? Is it not a real place? It's a fictional place. It's a real place. We could talk for a long time on this, but I'm going to put down who's interested in my story. And would you put as a first answer, if it's true, put your name, me. Are you interested in your story enough to at least reflect and record it for your own mapping of your story? A story is a place where you can reflect on why. Why did this happen? Why did that? From whence did I come? What are my influences? So if it's true, who's interested in my story? Let's at least have one person. What did blot that story of Lot? You have three people before the city would be burned down. Can you find two more that are interested in your story to make sure it's worth writing? Who's interested in your story? You got me. Is anybody else? Now, put two and three. Do you remember the Lot story? I won't burn the city down. I won't burn Nineveh. What was it?
Sodom and Gomorrah.
I won't burn the city down if there's at least three good people in the town. Well, they start with 10 and they say, well, try. Could we just have 9? Okay. 8? Well, let's get down to 3. So I'm asking the same question. Why write? Well, if you have at least 3 people interested, maybe it's worth it. So first you learn how to write and then everybody will be interested. It's a good story. Nobody will turn down. Have you read stories of Catholics? You had one of those. Have you had stories of Jewish? Name one. Author.
Bellum.
And the Portman's complaint is?
Roth.
Philip Roth, who's still writing. I don't think Michener's Jewish, I'm not sure. Have you read stories of French Catholic childhoods, say Quebec? Or France French childhoods, Catholic childhoods? All right, we've got Mormon, Mennonite. Have we read any Mennonite literature, any place, anywhere? There's a whole flood of it coming out of Canada, and a lot coming from Goshen, Indiana, and Pennsylvania. Well, we're slow to start, but maybe we just like to keep silent. And nobody know about us. That's the end of this section. Your question is, why write? Who's interested? I'm going to do what I had intended to do before Ned asked this huge question, who's interested in Lutherans? This book, very quickly, to answer a question, it is important to act as if bearing witness matters. This woman is Mary Matsuda. She grew up in Vashon Island. How many of you know where that is? Mm-hmm. Vashon is off Seattle. She was Japanese. In 1928, I believe, they immigrated. She was about 8 years, her family immigrated. They started the Berry Farms about 41. They were relocated into the desert, Utah, I believe, in this case. And she's nearly 80 and the book came out last year. So, how many years before she spoke? It is important to ask that, said Maxine Pullman, as if bearing witness matters. Well, maybe we don't have a big enough story. This is a story of injustice, of racism, of leaping to conclusions, of overkill. We'll take every single one of Japanese ancestry and lock them up for the duration of the war. So of course there's a story here, justice, injustice, and racism. Is it that we don't have enough injustice and racism in the Lutheran tradition? Maybe that's it. Probably didn't need to suggest such a thing. Why no story? There's two more that have just come out from this period. And I'll just do them really quickly since this is our question. Obasan came out from Canada, and that's Joy Kogawa in the 70s. It was the first in Canada to mention this. And we're just highlighting what texts finally have one individual dared to speak the story as opposed to the history, the numbers. You know, the history is written down, but the stories of people who lived it usually take a generation. Often take a generation. Obasan is the one out of Canada, relocation from Vancouver to Alberta, and With the Emperor Was Divine is one in California, written as a novel. So is Obasan. Both of them wanted to hide the authors, and they invented a fiction for their lived experience. This is all lived experience. Does anybody want to say something? Then we're going to go into prompts to write.
The first book you mentioned, what was the name of that, Mary?
Looking Like the Enemy. I am Looking Like the Enemy, My Story of Imprisonment. I'm going to leave one copy for the library, and you can look at this later. We're not discussing these. I'm bringing this up as an example of where you have injustice. Then there's a big story. What is your story? Is it worth recording if it's ordinary? Is your story ordinary, or is everyone's extraordinary? Do you want to write? Let's write. And stop saying, why, Reverend, you're here. I'm preaching to the converted. We're going to have one prompt for Marilyn Robinson. And it's about her reading. I'm reading you 5 lines. Your first invitation is to write about your reading life as a child. What did you read as a child? Where did you get your books? Who gave you books? Because writers are usually readers. This is one to do your life history of reading. And you'll get to write for 10 to 12 minutes today. I want to read about 10 lines to you. When I was a child, says Marilyn Robinson, I read books. I preferred books that were old and thick and hard. I made vocabulary lists. Surprising as it may seem, I had friends, some of whom read more than I did. There was little here in northern Idaho that was relevant to my experience. I read about Constantinople and Cromwell Revolution. Dull books, so some people thought, but relevance was not an issue for me. I looked to Galilee for meaning and to Spokane for orthodonture. And beyond that, the world where I was, I found entirely sufficient. I'm going to read one more paragraph. She's the author of Gilead, which some of you read last year, and Housekeeping, which came out 20 years ago. She's done 2 big novels, 30 years ago. So I invite you as your first choice to write, when I was a child, I read what? But here one more paragraph, because it's quite lovely. I went to college in New England, and I've lived in Massachusetts for 20 years, and I find that the hardest work in the world is to persuade Easterners that growing up in the West is not intellectually crippling. On learning that I'm from Idaho, people have not infrequently asked, then how were you able to write a book? Once or twice I said, well, I went to Brown, which is an East Coast college. And then they said, well, how did you manage to get into Brown if you're from Idaho? So the condescension toward the right from the West. So your first invitation is, what did you read? And you can make a list first of books and then begin writing what I read. But I'm going to give 2 more choices. I know we have a brief amount of time. We're going to take 3 strong ones.
and see what happens with their writing. And the second one is a one from Terry Tempest Williams. Would you write her name down? This is your second line I'm going to give you to open the text. Terry Tempest Williams. Does anybody know her?
Yep. Have you met her?
You've met her? And someone who read last night, the one we talked about 35, 36 years, was taught by Williams in third grade. Wow. Place her, please, in time and place.
Mormon, Utah, grew up when they were doing the bombing tests and fallout was falling. All of her women, female relatives died of breast cancer. She's also an environmentalist.
She's an environmentalist. She's not fiction. She writes memoir and on environmental issues. She's got a fabulous book called Red Earth, which is short essays on preservation of the land. All right. The things I read to you, if you haven't been before, have a very strong line, which I invite you to steal and use as your opening line to start. And you can hear it straight away in this one. I once lived near the shores of Great Salt Lake with no outlet to the sea. I once lived in a basin where mountains made of granite surrounded me. I once lived in a landscape where my ancestors sacrificed everything in the name of belief. I once lived in the city of Latter-day Saints. I have moved. I have moved because of a painting. Over the course of 7 years, I've been traveling in the landscape of Hieronymus Bosch, a secret I did not tell anyone for fear of seeming mad. This painting lives in Spain. It resides in the Prado Museum. The Prado Museum is found in the heart of Old Madrid. I will tell you the name of the painting I love. Do you hear how short her sentences are? They're like steps she's taking, left, right, left, right. The name is The Garden of Earthly Delights, Hieronymus Bosch. She discovered that it was a triptych, and that her family had the origin, Garden of Eden, and her family had the destination, which was heaven and all its glories. The family had removed the earthly delights, the one in the middle, because there were things that they didn't want the children to see. And so as an adult, when she discovered this, she went in search of the original painting, and it's filled with animals. And as a naturalist, she writes a whole book about her search, leaving from Madrid, living in Madrid, getting to the museum, what she saw first, writing. Whole book, it's called Leap. My invitation to you is to use the line, I once lived. And you hear where it shifts, but now I live here. And that'll give you an entry into relocation. Relocation, I once lived here, but now I live there. And for those of you who live at home, you can do that relocation if you like. I once lived, but now I live. So that's a form for this one. And since it's my last class, I'd like to do one more. Can we do this? And then we can start to write. Can you pass these around? This is written by a woman in Brooklyn, New York, who teaches children there. And I want to see how you to see how she does contrast. And this is an invitation for you to take home if you don't want to write out today. Maybe one for every two. You think I could take one from you? Can you share it? You two share? Would you mind? I think they're going to run out somewhere over here. Not Xerox somewhere if you need. Yeah, I'm going to just pass a picture over to you. I'm going to give you one. I think you can do that, would you? Would you take one from you? Who'd like to read? Here's one next. Who'd like to read the left side? Would one of you take the left, and I'm going to put do the ones in the middle there, indented. Who would read? Barbara, would you read one voice? Well, I don't need to do it. Take another voice.
I can do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Read the left side.
You read the left.
My nanny leaves at 5. Travels, takes the number 4 train, an hour and a half to your house. Makes you hot breakfast, hot pancakes with maple syrup. Washes your face.
I pour milk over cold cereal.
My nanny dresses you for school, puts on your gingham school uniform, polishes your shoes, wipes your runny nose.
I dress myself, tie my own shoes.
My nanny picks you up at 3, gives you a snack over warm chocolate chip cookies, takes you to the park.
I walk home by myself.
My nanny makes you dinner ready at 6, pepper steak, mashed potatoes, and string beans. Raspberry jello swirl for dessert.
I heat up leftovers.
My nanny gives you a bubble bath, puts on your PJs, reads you bedtime stories.
I double lock the bedroom door. I check the window gate on the fire escape. I sleep with my clothes on.
My nanny calls to see if I'm okay. I know the secret code, 2 rings and stop.
A radio cuddles me at night. Sheets hug me to sleep. Walls listen to me cry. Windows watch me grow.
My nanny will be home at 9.
What's the feeling? And take nanny is Nana as mother. This is Jamaican. So it's the mother of the girl. Nana, mama. What's the feeling you have when you finish? What feeling do you feel after you finish the poem?
Lonely.
Sense of loneliness to the speaker. You feel the loneliness. Injustice that she is without the mother and the other is with the mother.
Sadness.
Is there any word that says I'm sad?
Mm-hmm.
No. Is there any word saying there's injustice in the world I'm going to tell you about? No. Does she say I'm lonely?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get the feeling of her loneliness? I agree, she's lonely.
Because there's a radio cuddling her.
There's a radio cuddling her.
She
gives us a detail. She walks home alone.
Sheets hug me to sleep.
Walls listen to me cry.
Walls listen to me cry. No. Would you notice that this piece works by showing you every single detail but not telling you how she feels? And yet you know. And that the invitation here is to suggest that you can tell a situation with such detail that you've experienced, but the reader will know the feeling out of which you're writing. You don't always want to use this technique. But when I told you about going to England, what did I say? I forget.
No phone.
Okay, I could write a whole page of... When I was newly married, we had no furnace, no refrigerator, no phone, and then hope that by the end of the page, if I really stack it up, you'll feel sorry for me. But I might not say I really had a hard time. I might never use those words. So each of you has a situation where you can tell us all about it. Never say what you feel, but we will feel that way when we've finished. In other words, you've made it happen to us. You've given us a situation where we are so there, we feel her loneliness. She doesn't tell you, I am lonely. We feel lonely when she's told us the situation. So it's one of the 562 skills you learn as a writer, when to shut up about what you're feeling and show it, which is can be just as powerful. You've got enough choices. The last one, which is the throwaway one, if you don't like any of these, is take yourself this morning, waking up, and call yourself she or he, and start with your thinking and feeling as you wake up, and just practice a narrative talking about yourself as a third person. It's always nice to lie once, but that's not required. I woke up hearing, I woke up seeing, I woke up thinking about. You've got enough suggestions. If you don't like any of them, write what you like. And we'll wait for about 5 to 15 minutes. If you want to go outside, I'll call you. If you want to go to the back, there's a table. Any questions? I'm inviting you to use your own experience in one of the structures that has been introduced. Or go wherever you want. Please find your way to the end of a sentence. I'm interrupting you. You're not finished. The end of a sentence or a phrase. Draw a line. You might want to make a note of where you intend to go next or wanted to go next. You have to keep writing. Keep writing. It's more important than what we're going to do if you have to catch something. And draw the line when you get to the end of your line. And under the line, answer the question, what was that like to write? What was I thinking or feeling as I wrote? And this part is as important as what's above the line. It's a committee of three, me, myself, and I. How was that to work on? How many of you were at Vespers last night? And assuming one or two of those at least might have been from Lutheran background, were you interested in what they said? Let's go back to Viv's question. Who's interested in the story? Was there interest in your heart or the person next to you in your ears? And if so, why? Why? We spent 2 minutes on this while people are catching up. Were you interested? Or did you tune out and sing when it came up and wait for it to be over? Why was it interesting? What kind of discourse was it? It was not from the scriptures.
It was personal.
It was detail. It was particular. Was it teach and preach?
No, it was problem.
Visual.
It's visual because of
the light coming through the red stained glass windows onto the cross.
There's few that forget that. The light through the red windows comes onto the cross. So there were images, detail. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you that everyone will be interested in whatever story you write out of the dear ordinary? Doesn't have to be a relocation of great injustice if you give them writing, which is the sensory experience description. The sight, the sound, you learned this way back in English, but I'm connecting it to your life. That if you give them the details and let the reader live their story, live the story you're writing. Thank you. I'm inviting you all to go away and write memoir. And memoir has, you know, it's sort of a word that's come around in the last 20 years. I think there's reasons for it having to do with searching for women's stories, which were very often in the last 100 years or so in letters and diaries and journals. And so the memoir, which is a very personal form, is a piece of the life, and it's an ordinary life. Not the famous, not the end of the life, not the public figure. It's inner. I forgot to put that word out. Piece of the life, like it could be my college years, my nursing years, my child rearing, my marriage. There's a memoir in everything. You've seen them out there, haven't you? And you've bought one. Memoir is open to all, and don't forget the dark side. You can't have a memoir that's going to stand on two legs if there isn't the dark and the light. Is there any day that doesn't have dark? Is there any day that doesn't have dark?
No.
That was not a rhetorical question. And if you write a memoir that gives us only... I told Netta when we were talking about this, who's interested, is that I became a writer after reading every single Christmas letter sent to my parents. Oh. Do you know what I'm talking
yes.
about? Every
yes.
other family, yes. every other family had light. They were all doing music lessons, and they were all in Boy Scouts, and they were head of their track teams. And all these other children of the clergymen we heard from
were just perfect. They were written in their father or mother's own hand, these letters, not by the kids. Have you seen any of these letters? There was never anything dark. Except in one letter in about 10 years, it was, Irving is going to start a journal this year. He's been very sad. And I looked at this and I thought, this is not a Christmas letter. You do not mention anything dark. Do you know what I'm talking about? Well, maybe we have to leave the Christmas letters alone to be light and bright and only light and bright. But a memoir is to cover the dark and the light. Did you hear any dark last night? Shadow? Did you hear any shadow that wasn't all about sweetness and light? Give me a line, give me a phrase.
But Annette, do you have a better plan?
The teacher said, I have a better one. We don't write to blame or to shame, we write to admit or allow. I acknowledge this is how it was. Now, what the teacher said is not saying, look what teachers do to kids, it's this happened to me, I admit it. I acknowledge it. Any of the dark that you heard last night that was not just joyful, joyful, joyful?
I don't know if the words were actually said, but I felt one of the readers saying, like, I don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she actually said that, but that's what I walked away with, was just that feeling of.
Okay.
Rachel's, and I can't quote the word either, but that separation from God.
For 35 years, it was dressed for me, undressed on my behalf, prayed to for me, that I couldn't see.
And you?
Kim's image of being the stone with no arms.
That's pretty powerful. The stone with no arms. She did it totally in imagery. I am. And not all of them were strong images. The last one was a strong image and it had a double side to it. Can you give us the last image and say if you agree with me that there's a double?
Yeah, amidst the Grand Lodge, I am required to be the strong center pole.
Mm-hmm. Amidst the Grand Lodge, I am required to be the strong center pole. Where's the... Can I say tension there? And if I'm turning your piece around, don't let me do it. I'm required. Mm-hmm. So you hear all the implications of required. I am required. It's not I chose. Mm-hmm. It's not I am. I am required to be the strong center pole, which is a very powerful image. Strength, but it's also connected to I am required. So you get a balance. I invite you to dare to go the dark and the light. Anytime you think you shouldn't say something on the paper, say it. The paper's not going to tell on you. You can get rid of the paper, but find language for your experience and then decide what you're going to keep for the next person to read. But for you and the page, me, myself, and I, find language for your experience in order to know what the experience is and then think about starting to build a text to go to the outside world. This is all advice. I have one advice, really, only for writers, and that is to take no advice, including the advice to take no advice. I hope you got that. As writers, you don't need a workshop, you don't need a teacher, you need a piece of paper and a pen and a choice to do it. You can all do it. Now, we'd like to read. We read now. Here, Kim. And the one thing I ask you to do is put her name down, Kim, and take one quote. And that could be a word, a phrase, a half a sentence. You are just gathering words like pebbles from her piece and you'll echo them back to her. So, Kim, and... raise your voice a little bit, or lift your book a bit, because the horse is going
sure.
towards the floor, please.
I once lived on a 180-acre plot of land where crops were rotated and 48 cows were milked twice a day. I once lived on a hill where I could climb the silo and watch the sun melt into the earth like a gooey pink, orange, and blue ice cream sundae. I once lived on a farm where trees were my friend and kept me safe when I shimmied up them. I once lived in a house where it was unwise to sleep soundly because he might come in. I once lived in a place where I was supposed to do it better, faster, and over because it wasn't good enough. I once lived in constant fear, watching him move, stand, breathe, to detect rising danger. I once lived in a climate where the seasons went from white and pure to new hope, to mellow evenings, to spectacular colors in each. I once lived near a stream that would teach me weather changes our size, and so does life. I once lived alone on my own, in my own world of self-reliance, unable to count on human nurturing or protection. I once lived where hawks could soar gracefully, high above the green alfalfa fields, open to any and all opportunities the world has to offer.
Thank you, Kim. Breathe deeply, all of you, please, in particular, Kim. Breathe deeply, breathe her story in, and back to her. What's below the line, please?
Accurate, complete relief, moving forward, powerful.
Powerful. And I forgot to tell you why you have to put well done. Not Kim. She has to put well down. Kim, you have to put well down and put your name down. Go on, do it. Well done. Nobody else is going to applaud you for doing your private, lonely, alone writing work except yourself. Gloria Sawai, that I talked to, had never mentioned Lutherans. She had a computer programmed. Well done, Gloria. She said her son did it for her because he was so tired of hearing her say, oh, no, good enough, I can't. Well, she won our equivalent of the Pulitzer Prize. So you see what happens when you say, well done, every day? You get the prize. Now, Kim's words. Will you give her back words that you heard? I once lived. She moves in a wide map here. Give her what you like.
I'm wise to sleep soundly because you might come in.
Thank you.
Teacher? Weather changes our size and so does life. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Teach me weather.
Danger.
Next. Alone in a world of self-reliance.
Thank you.
I hawk above the alfalfa fields.
Hawk above the alfalfa fields. How many of you heard images which you have seen? Hands. Mm-hmm. A silo or a whatever. All right. What is the effect of knowing of what she speaks, not depending on her? What's the effect of that? How do you feel when you hear it describe what you know?
Connected.
Connected to it. Is it a nice feeling, you know, if you like the silo? Now, embedded in the middle of this is darkness. And it's surrounded by, what would you say, positive or negative images of nature?
Positive.
Hugely positive, nurturing ones. Are we okay with this? The reader got positive. In some ways, we're just giving you back what we got from you. If you wanted us to feel negative about nature, you'd have to do something else. They're very positive. I was nurtured and held and taught. Any other words you have for nature?
Trees kept me safe.
The trees kept me safe. Not someone in the home kept me safe, which you could hope for a child. The trees kept me safe.
The hawks that soared gracefully, open to all the world has to offer.
Open to all the world, not a confining space as if everything. And the silo was a hill?
The silo was up on a hill.
So there's height and then there's height again, and you've got vista and you've got distance, yes?
But I didn't get all this, but I think something like orange and pink clouds and all of them out like an ice cream.
No, I don't think you'd get that, because there are pretty a lot of clouds. Like a bracelet here. There's this huge puddle melting. Is that a good one for a sunset? Mm-hmm. And then there's the darkness. Who wrote down something from the darkness? Barbara had one. And we quote, we do not ever tell her a story. Oh, that's my experience too. The writer, just him. Never tell a story to the writer if you wish to make the writing room. And we do not ask more questions or give, we don't give opinion, we don't give judgment, we don't give commentary of any kind. It's all in the writing of it. And we honor the content.
I lived in constant fear.
I lived in constant fear. Not in the outdoors, it sounds like. But where? Indoors. It's almost reversed, dramatically reversed. Kim and I speak to you about the writing very particularly. You've dramatically reversed that outdoor is danger, indoor is safe. You've reversed it. Indoor was danger, outdoor was safe. And image after image after image. Does she ever say this?
No.
Do we get it from her images? Yes. You don't know, did you come in here planning to write this today?
No.
It's, I think, sometimes waiting. Please give me a chance. Choose me. Choose this word. Choose this word. You're writing inside you. How did that feel when you were finished? I guess we asked you that under the line.
Accurate, complete, moving forward. Yeah. Relief, powerful.
Thank you, Kim. That's a very important piece of work.
Thank you.
Deep breath, everybody. Like to read. Now, I need to morally obligated to inform you it's 5:45. I stay till 6 to listen. If you need to go, go. But I should say something nice to conclude. Thank you for coming. I'm glad you did a bit of writing today. The questions I raise at the beginning of class are ones I've asked for 2 weeks, and thanks to Netta, We raised them at the beginning of the class together. Why write? For whom do we write? When do we write? If you've ever read a book that's changed your life, believe me, you can write a book that will change the next person's life. If you've ever needed a book you couldn't find, you may have to write the one you couldn't find. But enough cheerleading. Enjoy, please, if you enter into the blank page. Margaret Atwood says about the blank page is that underneath the page is everything that's ever happened. The page waits, pretending to be blank. Go there if you dare. So I hope you're scared to death and delighted to enter into the blank page to see what's found there. Now, if you can stay, we'll read some more. The model we use in any writing class is this, to listen to everybody. Now, if you have to go, please find somebody to read to before the end of the day. And now, you can go. Dinner's till 6:15, is it? Okay, so I'll stay with those who want to read, and we'll do as many as we can in 10 minutes. Pull up your chair, and let's start right away. But please look at somebody you can talk to later.
But you have to read your name with me.
Who'd like to from you? Yes, okay, over here.
You have to read out loud.
If I can read it.
If you can't, then you can't read. Can you read it?
I'm
probably going to give you half time because of being at the end here, that each person reads about half of theirs. Okay.
Sorry. When I was 6, I liked to write stories, only I could not write. So I told them to my daddy, who wrote the stories down on a wide line newsprint pad. He tore the pages out and pulled them in half while I colored beautiful colors for them. When I was 6, I remember racing into the bathroom, screaming, jumping up and down. I remember my daddy rushing in after me, certain I was morally afflicted, only to find that I had waited too long. That I'd waited too late, till too late. When I was 6, we moved to a farm with cows and chickens and a creek running through. With clay in the banks, we could dig out and mold, and an old silage pit we used as a swimming pool in summer. Still, I was 6 when my mother and sister and I came home from town one day where my sister had gotten new red-rimmed glasses and my daddy had stayed home with the flu. It was a cold, damp, typical January evening in Western Washington State. My mother's new pressure cooker was on the stove already cooking the potatoes, as my daddy knew that Mama took her time getting acquainted with new appliances. Daddy waited for us in the kitchen rocking chair, and when we came in, he said to my mother, "Margaret, when I die, scatter my ashes in Death Valley, where the sun will always shine on them." Daddy got up and walked into the living room, leaning on the stove. We followed him through the doorway, watching with concern as he eased himself down on the sofa. He clutched his knees to his chest, but said no other word and was gone.
What's below the line, dear?
Nothing. I was writing when she was reading Mr. Peace. I just...
That's okay. You needed to do that.
I've never done it before, so it was good.
Take a deep breath, please. Thank you for writing. Thank you for coming to us. What was his name, please?
Well, we called him Bill. His name was William Colin Bill.
And his full name?
William George Baker.
William George Baker. In memory of William George Baker. By some accident, you finish at a natural point of finish, and then you're going to draw a line, and you're going to write the next page, and the next page, and the next page, all right? For as much as you could go today, you got... He pulled up his knees and then he was gone. And when you come back to this, will you start with what happened next? And then, and then, and then. Can we give you words, or would you like to use your time otherwise?
No, I don't think I'm going to write anymore today.
No, I don't today. But can we give you words that we heard?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Daddy.
The red rim glasses.
Mm-hmm. And still, I was 6. This is a brilliant maneuver. Why is it brilliant? Anyway, what did you feel when you heard, "I was 6, I was 6, still I was 6, when?" What did you feel?
Something momentous was going on.
Something, when you rehearse it,
You have tears. When you reverse it, you may be moving towards a contrast. So there's been mm-hmm. sweet memories, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. a contrast coming. Still, I would say that just slipped in there. I don't suppose you even chose to do it. We heard it.
It's I thought about flag. It, actually. I thought about whether I should have it in there or not.
It's perfect. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to interrupt a pattern as a writer. Any artist knows when to interrupt. Same, interrupt. You wouldn't have weaving if you didn't have interruption with another color, right? Mm-hmm. Same writing. Same, a reversal or an interruption. For example, you wouldn't want to have... Never mind, that's another point. How did you feel listening to it?
That's just struck close to my personal experience lately.
All right, and we're going to break all the rules and ask you what that is. If a writing is going to work, you keep with one writing, but because of our situation here, we're living together at home. What is your situation? Can she tell you this? Is this okay?
Absolutely. Yeah. Both my grandpas died last month, and I was with both of them, and they both, one night on Saturday, one night on Wednesday.
And both unexpected?
Yeah.
And you happen to be with both of them?
They had both been brought to the hospital. So, yeah.
So you
with
both
of them.
Some...
Yeah.
Oh, well, take a deep breath. Were you... Okay, the place you were?
I'm sorry.
The place you were?
In Minnesota. That's where I'm from.
Would you mind giving us their names? And this is how we all know.
Good Norwegian Lutheran, Ovi Pettersen.
Ovi Pettersen.
Yeah. And then Dick McNellis.
Dick McNellis does not sound like a Norwegian.
No, Catholic Irish.
Catholic Irish.
I have unique genes that way.
And did you have words with either of them? You don't have to answer. Yeah. You were able to have words with either. Then you've got the two grandpa's names, and you can tell a story about them. And you can tell a story about your father, maybe both of you. A mini biography. He was born here. It was like one sentence for each decade. You do a mini biography. Mm-hmm. Who was he? I'm asking you a question. Who was your grandfather? Who was your other grandfather? Same for yours. Who was your father? And if when you turn the page, I said do the next and next and next, but you might want to take a break and do a page of who was he, where did he come from, why were you in Western Washington. I would say the more you can write it, the greater the ease. To release it is to receive ease. Oh, do you believe that? Sounds like it's just, I hope you believe it.
I'm very interested in writing a history of both my parents.
Okay, well you've got a fine start, but you can interrupt right there, let the reader, leave yourself at that couch and then say, my father came from... He was 26 when he married my mother. You can do the bio. And then you can come back, draw a line. After we sat down, we did this. You might want to look up Jill Curran Conway. I don't know if this helps anyone with sudden death. Jill Curran Conway grows up in Australia, has a similar story. Death in the Family by James Agee has a similar sudden...
James...
A-G-E-E. It's the most beautiful boyhood memoir. It's written as a fiction, but it's straight memoir of losing his father. I would say that might be the one to go to first, is Death in the Family. If you like. Thank you. Would you like to read from yours?
Sure.
And your name, please.
Chris.
Chris.
Sorry, I'm a little... Okay, yeah.
Take it.
This is actually kind of funny, so... Or the beginning, at least. When I was a child, I read I Wish That I Had Duck Feet continuously. No matter how many times I read it, I was still delighted when the character received an elephant trunk, tiger tail, or duck feet. Looking back with adult eyes, I wonder what this book says about me and how I view the world. I wonder if it's good or bad. Well, on the positive side, I'm open to adventure, new body parts and all. I have a childlike joy, very similar to the young man the book portrays. On the negative, well, honestly, is there a negative? Should I have been studying geology or memorizing the names of former presidents? I can't say I gained much from the book in the measurable sense, but laughter and joy came in abundance. As I got older, I became enthralled with the Great Brain series. My life is definitely reflective of Tom's, except I'm probably not quite as smart. With the recent death of my grandpas, I am very aware of how my life parallels Tom Sawyer's. and how we both broke the rules when we thought it was right.
Oh, you patched a lot there.
Mm-hmm. You know, to do Tom Sawyer and what he meant to you and the rules you broke. Well, now that's a page each. Let's go blind, please.
To some surprise, but not really if I think about it, my writing led to my grandpa's.
Are any of you surprised? I'm glad it came that way, and I'm glad you can go and move towards, I hope you can go move towards more. It doesn't always come right away, you may wait. But they're there on the page, they'll wait until you come back. When you want to come back. Words for Chris.
Laughter and joy in abundance.
We both broke the rules and we thought it was right.
Mm-hmm. New body parts and all.
That was kind of odd.
The Great Brain series. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can see you falling into that. Now we do two things. I want to hear the echo. And then if you're working together, it's appropriate with some pieces and not with others to say, I want to hear more about. So we've already done it in a sense with yours. I want to hear more about your grandmas. I want to hear more about Tom. I want to hear more about the rules you broke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And I want to hear more about your father. You see how there's basically just two questions. And the third one we did earlier, how did you feel when you read about Erica DeRuth's Nana's poem? And I use that as a writing workshop very rarely. Because sometimes if you've written something and I say I feel sick to my stomach, it doesn't make you feel very good. But it may be that what you wrote made me remember something that has nothing to do with your writing. It doesn't mean you're writing. So I use it very rarely. But we did it with Erica DeRuth to say, look how she makes us feel something, even though she never says how she feels. All right. It's my last class teaching here, so I figure I have to tell you everything I know in 1 hour. How did I get on the bus if I haven't finished things properly? We have 4 more lessons. We never did. I mean, what do we do? We need to get our dinners, and I'm quite happy to read again after. I don't know if you're occupied at 6:30, but I don't think we'll do it after session tonight. It's my last night, and I'm probably going to walk the rails or the road or whatever. We've often met after session. But I'm quite happy to come back here at 6:45. That gives you plenty of time to eat. Is anybody interested? Or should I just show up and see if you...
Yeah, I'd like to.
I'll come for at 1, just like 1. No, ask me 2. Okay, there's 1. Anybody else?
I'll come.
I'll listen to yours. There. I'm not trying to persuade you.
6:45.
There's 3. I'll come for any. If you see anybody that was here, would you like to come and sit in?
Thanks. I'm supposed to go practice something with some ladies.
You do that. I'm not trying to push you. I'm saying I'm here, and if you see anybody who is in the class who want to read, you can just listen more. So I'll be here at 6:45.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.